Everyone hear me? Okay, great. So I am James. I'm so glad to be here presenting at SOC. I'll have you know the paper is an award paper, but it only became an award paper after 5 previous rejections. I think that it's important for grad students to hear about this because it's very easy to think that you only see people's successes. And so I want to let you know you're not the only person who gets their papers rejected. And I want to give a special shout out to all the reviewers who gave the paper low scores in the past. I am mad at you, okay? I thank you for those 5 opportunities to receive emails that describe the numerator of how many papers were accepted, and then the denominator of how many papers were submitted, and then the observation that I am not here up at the top. So those experiences have made me stronger. So to all you grad students out there, 2 messages. First of all, never give up on your dreams. Second of all, just to be clear, most of my papers don't get rejected 5 times. Okay, I don't want to start a rumor out there that I oftentimes have rejected papers. Usually it's one-time submission-ish. But I digress. So this talk is about time travel. So in particular, I'm going to describe a new type of replay debugger. And so this debugger called Reverb is going to allow you to go back in time, change something about a buggy execution of a web service, and then see what would have happened if that change had taken place in the context of the original program execution. So we invented Reverb because web services are hard to debug. When a user loads a page, that page typically has a bunch of JavaScript content on it, and understanding that content is difficult because there's so many kinds of asynchronous events that can trigger JavaScript execution. GUI events, network events, storage-related events, so on and so forth. So understanding those interleavings is very challenging. Another impediment to debugging web services is that there are so many different network hosts that can be involved with just a single client-generated request. So for example, imagine that a service uses a multi-tier architecture like the one right here. So you can imagine that the client browser generates a request, sends it to the front end. The front end's then going to send some additional requests to workers. In turn, those workers talk to the storage layer, so on and so forth. And so then there are going to be some responses that are going to be sent back along that reverse path. So understanding sort of this web of causality across the wide area is very hard just due to the number of events that are taking place and how asynchronous they are. Now this is why I would claim that traditional in-browser debuggers are insufficient. So don't get me wrong, they're actually useful for understanding the state that are in your local browser. However, they don't provide any deep insights about what's happening on remote servers. And similarly, if you look at the research on deterministic replay, it gets us part of the way there, but not all the way. So if you look at things like Revert, which does replay at the level of x86 events, or RR, which does login replay at the level of system calls, or even some of my own prior work, Mugshot, which does replays at the level of the JavaScript event loop. All this stuff is great, it's very powerful, but it doesn't allow us to understand causality in the way that I'll explain later on in the talk. Reverb is also related to program slicing, which some of you from the PL community may have heard of. So a slicing criterion is going to identify a line of source code that you want to examine, as well as the variables of interest in that source code line. And then you can define something called a backward slice, which basically tells you what are the source code lines that influence the variables in the slicing criterion. So roughly speaking, what you do is you create a control flow graph, and you essentially work backwards through the control flow graph, starting at the location of the slicing criterion. So for example, if you had some code over here that's going to read in a number in line 1, and then use that number to influence the computation of a sum and a product, well, you can imagine that you might want to calculate a backward slice of that last line there. Line 10, what's the backward slice with respect to the variable product? So that slice might look something like this. And so you'll see that the slice actually omits lines of source code that only impacted the sum and not the product. So this is very nice. This technique has been known in the PL community for a while. However, even if you use slices, some unsolved problems still remain. What problems? As a professor, I oftentimes answer my own questions. So one of those problems is, how do we extract fine-grained causal relationships involving these asynchronous wide-area interactions? So none of the prior work that I showed you is able to answer questions like, how was the value of this particular variable at this particular time influenced by both local events and remote events? So another unsolved problem is, how do we determine whether a hypothesized bug fix would have solved a historically observed problem? In other words, even if we knew the provenance of all the values in the system, we still wouldn't know whether a particular code change would fix the bug. But don't worry, let me show you the answers, my children. I'm from the future, everything will be revealed. So now I'm gonna tell you how reverb works. I'm first gonna explain to you how we do fine-grained wide area causality tracking, and then I'll tell you how we define the semantics for speculative replay. So first, let me give you a little bit of introduction into how we log events. So a few slides ago, I showed you this multi-tier web service on the right. So the new figure on the left is just the network timeline version of the same thing that I'm showing you on the right. So looking at the network timeline will make it easier to visualize the logging strategy that Reverb uses. So first, let's take a look at the JavaScript code that's running on the web browser. So that code is going to make a call to math.random, which is a non-deterministic function. So if we look on the left-hand side of the slide, we see that Reverb is going to log a non-deterministic event. Now that event is going to contain the value that was returned by the math.random call. So after the JavaScript code invokes math.random, it increments a variable, issues a network request via an XHR. So for the purposes of this example, we'll assume that that request is a synchronous one. Now in the fourth line of code, the browser is going to parse the response from the network and is going to use it to increment a variable. Now this response is non-deterministic, it comes over the network. So Reverb needs to update its log with a non-deterministic value. If we look at that log event, what we see is that it contains the value that was retrieved by the network fetch. Now so far what I've shown you is very similar to the way that traditional login replay debuggers work. However, if we go back to the right-hand side and look at the JavaScript code again, then we see that it performs three deterministic actions: incrementing a variable, issuing the network fetch, and then incrementing another variable. An interesting aspect of Reverb is that it logs deterministic events in addition to non-deterministic events. So if you look on the left-hand side, you'll see that Reverb is going to add three deterministic events to the log. So that first log record indicates that the left-hand side of the assignment was the recmade variable, and the right-hand side was the value recmade plus one. The second log record is going to indicate that the right-hand side was that function call, which was going to issue the XHR. And in this case, there's no left-hand side because the return value was ignored, and so on and so forth. So logging this determinism is going to allow Reverb to quickly generate a data flow provenance graph at debugging time. Now, I'm sure that a lot of you are thinking, this sounds very expensive, right? So there has to be a reason that prior frameworks weren't logging all of this deterministic activity. Well, that is true. But Reverb actually leverages a key insight, which is that logging both the non-determinism and the determinism in a program becomes feasible when application code is running atop a single-threaded managed interface. So why does this help? Well, if the application code is single-threaded and event-driven, like the JavaScript runtime, for example, that you see on the browser and also in Node, then you don't need to log and replay thread schedules and synchronization events. So this dramatically decreases the complexity of the system. And furthermore, if you run atop a managed runtime, then you only need to log a smaller variety of deterministic and non-deterministic events. So in contrast, it's much more difficult and much more complicated to log determinism and non-determinism if you're doing this at the POSIX layer, or heaven forbid, if you're doing this at the x86 layer, you should go find a priest. Now, to make Reverb's efficiency more concrete, consider that after a page load, the median log size on the client that Reverb generates for both deterministic and non-deterministic events is only 45 kilobytes. And also note that the user-perceived overheads are low. So for example, user-perceived page load time increases by only 5.5%. So I think that Reverb is certainly fast enough to be used in test deployments, and is actually fast enough, we believe, to be used in many production deployments as well. All right, so let's go back to our example, and let's take a look at the code that runs on the front end. So that code's gonna take in a client request, which is a non-deterministic input from the perspective of the front end. So on the left-hand side of the slide, we're gonna add the relevant entry to the front end's log, as well as a causal arrow, which indicates where that event came from. And if we look at that log entry, we'll see that we store the value of the request, as well as a vector clock that allows us to synchronize log entries across different hosts. Now back on the right-hand side of the slide, we see that the front end makes two synchronous XHRs, it receives the non-deterministic responses, and then returns the sum of the responses to the client. So on the left part of the slide, Reverb is going to add the corresponding events and causal connections. And we can perform similar analyses for the worker nodes. So for example, if you look at worker one, we see that it receives a non-deterministic request from the front end, then issues a database write and a database read. So the value that was read is then returned to the front end. So what Reverb is going to do is create the log entries you see on the left. And similarly, if we look at worker two, it receives a non-deterministic input from the front end and then reads a non-deterministic input from the database and returns that value to the front end. So we'll end up creating a log that looks like this. So this is all fine and dandy, but how can we as human developers take advantage of this delightful assortment of geometric shapes and arrows? Well, imagine that a developer is trying to answer a question like this. On the client side, why is that variable count equal to 780? Well, to answer this question, Reverb can show her the data flow graph. So starting with the line of code at the browser, Reverb says, well, where does this yellow value come from? So Reverb can track that yellow value to the front-end code. So in particular, that yellow network response was generated by the front-end network send. But how did that send get generated? Well, it was influenced by two XHR responses from the worker nodes. And so we can follow this process backwards, right? We can look at that second worker node, figure out that here is where the purple network activity was generated. Well, that network activity depended on value. Aha, working backwards to the data flow graph, we see where the value came from. It came from the database. And if we look at that green XHR in the front end, where did it come from? Well, let's go backwards to the data flow graph. We see that it came from that first worker node. It came from that line of code in green up there at the very top. It was influenced by the variable temp, and that came from a read of the database. So hopefully you can see that distributed data flow queries are a powerful debugging tool. Now, you might have noticed that in all my examples so far, all the code is using JavaScript, which assumes that the server-side components are using Node. But what about a native code software that runs on the server side? Well, if a native code participant is single-threaded and event-driven, then Reverb can log and replay it at the event interface. So imagine you have something like Redis here. It's written in C, but from the outside world, it looks like an event-driven black box. So what Reverb can do is place an event proxy between Redis and external clients and use that proxy to log events, and then later on at replay time, to control how external events get dispatched to Redis. Now, to be clear, Reverb cannot see inside that black box component to actually see the fine-grained data flows involving C state, right? But we can still incorporate it into our overall login replay framework. All right, so now I'm going to tell you how we implement the semantics for divergence doing speculative replay. As many of you who like sci-fi movies know, the number one urge of the time traveler is to change something and see what happens. So how does Reverb support this? Well, here's the intuition. The intuition is that, let's say on the left we have some buggy program execution. And in this example, the bug was triggered by the second deterministic activity. Now on the right-hand side, we see a speculative replay. We replay that program right up to the point where it would have executed that second deterministic event. But then we pause the replay, we change something about the code or the data of the program, then we resume the replay. Now, as you can see, the resume program will generate some deterministic activity and some non-deterministic activity. Now, in this example, some of that deterministic activity is new. That is to say, it wasn't seen in the original execution. The speculative execution also has some new non-determinism, for example, a new call to math.random. But perhaps the most interesting thing about speculative replay is that we want to take the original log non-determinism in the original log on the left, and we want to apply this old non-determinism to the post-edit replay to the greatest extent possible. Now, the research challenge is defining precisely what it means when we say to the greatest extent possible. And at first glance, this seems hard. You might fear, oh my God, we've created this two-headed monster, some unholy thing that's incorporating non-determinism from a bunch of different sources. How could this be helpful? And so one of the core contributions of the paper is to define speculative divergence semantics. So imagine that we've got a program that has the following log of non-deterministic activity. There's a key press event for the H key. That event's going to trigger the execution of the JavaScript function KP0. And in turn, KP0 invokes KP1, which sets the JavaScript variable timer period to the value of 4. There's a mouse click event for the left mouse button. That's going to trigger some event handler MC, which is then going to register a timer to fire in timer period seconds from now. There'll be a network event which brings in some network data to the program. There's going to be an event handler that fires, that processes that fetch data. Here we see a timer firing. That timer callback is going to call the built-in date function. It's like a timestamp function. And since date is a non-deterministic one, a non-deterministic function, we're going to have a log record, which is going to record the value that was returned by date. Now, in this example, the date that's returned is basically 5 hours, 23 minutes, and 4 seconds past midnight. Alrighty, so let's imagine that we want to do a speculative edit and replay. So we replay the program up to the point that KP1 is going to be executed. So in the edit, we're going to change the timer period variable from 4 to be 3. So the timer should fire in 3 seconds instead of 4. Also, we're going to cancel the XHR. That is to say, we're going to close the associated network stream. So then we resume replay. So what is Reverb going to do now? Well, we know that Reverb needs to mark that, that upcoming XRH event as invalid. We don't want Reverb to replay this event because in the altered execution, the associated network stream no longer exists. And we also know that Reverb needs to get rid of the timer event. And the reason is that the edit changed the waiting period of the timer from 4 seconds to 3 seconds. So the timer event in the log actually fires too late. But of course, if we delete that timer event, then we no longer need that logged date value, since the deleted timer function will never execute, and therefore we're never going to need that entry in the log. So these are the non-deterministic events that Reverb deletes. But Reverb also needs to add some new non-deterministic events. So these new events represent the non-determinism which Reverb speculates would occur in this new altered universe. So for example, Reverb will add a new timer event which fires 1 second earlier than it did in the original replay. Reverb will also add a modified date event which returns a timestamp that is 1 second earlier than the original log timestamp. And so this example gives a flavor of how Reverb handles speculative edits. In the paper, we describe sort of more general purpose techniques for handling divergence. But suffice it to say that the sort of high level overview looks kind of like this. So essentially, we make a change, we roll forward through the log, and we say, well, what log entries are now no longer valid? And in some cases, we then need to add new log entries to account for the fact that now we've essentially changed the past. So for more details about that, I will defer you to the paper. So that's at a high level how the time travel stuff works. So time travel, what could go wrong? Well, of course, like many, many things could go wrong. Arguably, this is a bad slide to put up there. I should have practiced the talk. So I will very quickly give you a few evaluation results that give you a feel for why we think that Reverb is a cool tool. So first of all, how does our prototype work? So basically, we use rewriting of HTML and JavaScript to log and replay non-determinism and to log the deterministic reads and writes. We made a custom proxy for logging and replaying Redis. And we also used a modified version of the MyMahi HTTP replay tool to essentially ensure that we can rewrite content and that we can make sure that we can pass that to our replay driver. And so the main result that I want to give you, which will sort of capture the flavor of Reverb, is that we said, can Reverb actually speculatively replay bug fixes that we know are correct? So in other words, imagine, like I showed you in the previous diagram, a bug is triggered here. What if we have a fix that we already know from a bug tracker is good? Can we actually apply that in the new world? And so what we did is we went to jQuery's database and actually found some bugs. Right, and so we found bugs that had been successfully resolved and that were actually expressive enough that we could actually recreate them. So for each one of these bugs, we downloaded the buggy jQuery version. We verified that Reverb could reproduce the bug using standard, that is to say, non-speculative replay. And then we replay jQuery to immediately before the bug, apply the known good fix, and then see, and it's all what happened when we resumed replay. So as it turned out, for all 5 bugs, the mutated replay exhibited the fixed behavior, right? So this gives us some confidence that speculative replay works. Of course, this is totally unsound, what I just told you. Like, in no way did I prove that speculative replay was correct, but I will note that regular non-Reverb debugging is unsound, too. And so at least what Reverb allows you to do is use these data flow diffs to actually determine exactly where things went sideways when a speculative execution differs from the normal one. So in conclusion, this presentation was about making the world a better place through the miracle of time travel. I'm sure that many of us have done things that we wish that we could undo. I'll personally say the 80s were a tough time for me. That one photo over there has haunted me for my entire life. Apparently there was a whole photo shoot. I was really struggling. I could have used a mentor that was not a bird. But anyways, today I talked to you about Reverb, which is a speculative replay debugger. It targets web services that use single-threaded managed code interfaces. By targeting those particular applications, Reverb can efficiently log non-deterministic events and log deterministic reads and writes to program state. It can also tractably reason about the impact of speculative edits during replay, and Reverb uses data flow analysis for value provenance and speculation assistance to help the developer understand, well, if my speculated replay behaved in a different way, I can look at those data flow graphs and actually figure out why it went wrong. So with that, I'll thank you for your time. I'd be glad to take any questions.
Okay, well, I'll take some questions now. Oh, over there.
Hey, James. This is very cool, very interesting.
Thanks.
Just trying to figure this out. So, like, I'm still kind of wrapping my head around like how you're able to make those non-deterministic decisions about what to edit. Like, are these like classes of like changes that you'd allow making and then know what to edit, or like you said, like remove 1 second from like a timer or something like that, right? Just trying to wrap my head. How would you know that? How do you know that?
Who is you in this case? The human debugger?
The program. Yeah, sorry.
So let's see, okay, so there's what the human debugger does, then there's sort of like what Reverb does after the edit is made. So roughly speaking, imagine what the human developer does is like in the case of like a jQuery experiment, we actually had some hint about what the correct fix was. So we could literally pause the program, like you pause like using a regular breakpoint or whatever, and then go into the program and literally just hand change state and then hit resume and then go forward. Right? So that part is driven, at least in our current use cases, by human sort of intuition about things. Then what happens next is that Reverb sort of takes over automatically, and because it understands the semantics of all the JavaScript interfaces, it knows how to do that sort of, you know, event deletion and new event assertion that I showed in the, a few slides ago.
I see. Just one more quick thing, if you don't mind, Timothy. In the future, are you going to like extend it? Like, do you have to worry about like poison state as a result of the edits in the future? And is that going to be like another step?
Let's see. So by poison state, you mean things like externalizing?
Like an edit somehow changes what data ends up being written or read.
So as it turns out, so this is a good question. So one thing that we talk about in the paper that I didn't have time to talk about here is what happens if during one of these speculated replays, there's a new network request that happens that goes to, let's say, a server that's not controlled within your test environment. There you have to make a policy decision, right? If it actually goes to a server that you're replaying at the same time as everything else, what's interesting is that that new sort of speculative request from the perspective of a client, it just becomes a new speculative input to that other server, right? So we can use sort of the same rules to handle those types of things.
Hi, great talk. My question was that how do you mark all these function calls as deterministic and non-deterministic? Do you like label all the functions that are in JavaScript as deterministic and non-deterministic?
Right.
And the other question is that, so what if you label a sort of a function as deterministic while it's doing a non-deterministic job inside the function?
Okay.
Maybe a function that was written by a user, not and it's not a standard function in a library.
Right, these are all great questions. So let's see. So in terms of how do we determine what is a deterministic versus non-deterministic, let's say, browser API, suffice it to say that there has been prior work on just doing deterministic replay debugging for the web, which is basically, I never want to say solve that problem, but these papers essentially have a table, which says like, hey, here are all the DOM interfaces that are non-deterministic, and so we kind of leverage that. Now, any code that's user-defined, we essentially assume that it's going to be deterministic, except when it calls out to these known non-deterministic functions or interfaces, like math.random and things like that. With respect to I think perhaps your second question might have been asking about, or sort of at least hinting at, what if we make a mistake maybe? Or like, you know, what if, for example, Redis isn't actually event-driven in the way that we want it to be? Yeah, things are going to go sideways, right? So we don't have a good way, a sort of like a principled way to deal with that right now. We are actually very interested in integrating this with login replay frameworks for native code components. Those things exist, right? So you can imagine that you could try to hook those things up somehow, but we haven't fleshed this idea out yet, though.